On the morning after President Obama brought his emotional message of hope to our community, "Let the Healing Begin." On the morning after Gabrielle Giffords opened her eyes for the first time since the weekend shooting rampage that left her struggling for her life, again I say, "Let the Healing Begin." And on the morning after we begin to bury the dead and continue to pray for all those impacted by Saturday's tragedy, I'll say it a third time, "Let the Healing Begin." Welcome to the Buckmaster Show. For Thursday, January 13th, 2011, I am Bill Buckmaster, your host for the Buckmaster Show, live on KJLL AM 1330 and always on the World Wide Web at buckmastershow.com. We are live weekdays from 9 to 10 a.m. The program re-airs from 7 to 8 p.m. here on KJLL. On today's show, Pima County Supervisor Richard Elias in studio. TEP Executive Steve Lynn will join us. Regional Transportation Authority Executive Director Gary Hayes and the Buckmaster Show contributor on history, Ken Scoville, will be along to attempt to place the Gabrielle Giffords assassination attempt in some kind of historical context for our community. We welcome now Richard Elias, Pima County Supervisor. Supervisor Elias, it is always a pleasure to see you.
Good morning, Bill, and it's great to be here on the Buckmaster Show for the first time, and just real pleased about the shows that I've heard and what's been going on here at 1330, actually.
We are off to a great start, and it's sad, of course, that our second week had to be so much of what we've been talking about is the horrible Saturday slaughter at outside the Safeway, but that's what's on the mind of Tucsonans, and we're here to serve the Tucsonans. So I want to talk with you a little bit about where were you when you heard the news on Saturday morning, Richard?
Well, I was at home with my family, and I heard from another family member who works there at the shopping center where the whole incident took place. And it was very shocking and very sad. And then immediately after that phone call, I heard from the county officials that were already handling the crime scene.
I'm sure you're proud of the way the county has responded to this tragedy.
I think the Pima County Sheriff's Office has done an excellent job, and all our first responders, the folks up there at Northwest Fire District, I think did a great job as well. Our emergency rooms reacted quickly and nimbly to all of this event. The Department of Public Safety from State of Arizona did an excellent job as well. But especially Mr. Castigar did a great job.
The Pima County Sheriff's Office.
On the whole event. And, of course, Sheriff Dupnik leads a great organization. We're very proud of all of them.
You were at the memorial service last night. Some of your thoughts.
You know, I think the president was articulate and said the right things on just about every subject that he addressed during his speech. He really helped begin that healing process for people. And I think his words were so dramatic that they drew those loud cheers from people, because that's what people in Tucson really feel. That's the sentiment that we have, the level of positivity about Gabrielle and her improved condition, seeing some of the families there and wanting to love them and be with them. And that was a very important part of it. It was great to see Mark and some of the other folks that were there, as well as to see officials from all across our country come here and eulogize those who have lost their lives and start to discuss how we get back to healing ourselves and improving the national dialogue.
You know, we are a great community. I mean, you've lived here all your life. In fact, I believe your family goes back to Presidio days.
That's
correct. That's how long we're talking about the Elias family and clan being associated with Tucson, Arizona. This is my second time here. I went to did my undergraduate work, came out here from Chicago in the late 60s, fell in love with the place, came back in 1988. And you know what I love so much about this community is you go into any store here and people are friendly. They say hello to you. This is a very friendly community. That's not going to change by what happened Saturday.
No, I don't think that'll ever change. That's something that is deep in our hearts and our souls. And I've been telling people that, in truth, the acts of heroism that came out of Saturday's event, the actions of those two Sonnens, are more indicative of what kind of community we have than any of the crazy, extreme political folks on either end of the spectrum. They're not indicative of what Tucson's like. The people who were there at McHale last night, the people who saved people's lives at the event, that's what the Tucson that I know. That's the Tucson that I serve. That's the Tucson that was written about for 60 years in El Tucsonense, the Spanish language newspaper that my family published, as well as in the hearts and minds of the elders who taught us how to live here in our community. That's the spirit of Tucson. That's who we really are.
And those heroes, Richard, Supervisor Elias, those are the people who are leading us back. Those are the people who are leading us in this journey that we have now begun on, this healing journey.
Absolutely. They are our leaders. They are the folks we respect. And that's the spirit of America, the spirit of Tucson, that's important. And yeah, it'll live forever here in Tucson, but that doesn't mean we shouldn't protect it.
That's right. Now, the board went on with a regular meeting. I know you feel very strongly about this. It was important for the Pima County Board of Supervisors to conduct the regular meeting on Tuesday. Some of your thoughts about that.
You know, I love this place. I try very hard to be a dedicated public servant, but I'll tell you, no matter what happens here in America in terms of tragedy, we need to continue on with the business of government, because that's what our forefathers have done. That's the way our government is structured. It is structured to last. It is structured to endure a challenge. And us having that meeting was a part of enduring whatever we need to endure in order to continue creating a safe place for people to live. Well, we do business here in America. That's what the Pima County Board of Supervisors did on Tuesday morning.
I know you've had a lot of reporters inquire about your reaction to Sheriff Dubnyk and the comments that he made Saturday night. You want to share some of that with us?
Well, you know, Sheriff Dubnyk, I think, spoke his mind, and I'm glad he did. He's been a police officer longer than I've been alive. I believe he became a police officer in April of 1958. I was born in December of 1958.
Well, we share that. He celebrated his birthday morning. He was on our program here, his 75th birthday.
That's beautiful.
And like you say, he's been in law enforcement certainly more than 50 years.
Even if Sheriff Dubnyk misspoke in some way, the gist of what he said is true. We have been drifting towards a very ugly kind of dialogue in our country, and really, we don't need to do that. We need to find ways to communicate better the differences between the political parties from our political perspectives. We need to be able to speak freely and not have the fear of being shouted down or treated badly because of what we believe. That's fundamental to us. So I think Sheriff Dubnyk really said the right thing. I think he was courageous in doing it, and those people who criticize him for being old or senile, and I've seen so many horrible things written about him, they don't understand what a valuable asset we have, what a calming influence he is in our community, what a respectable organization he runs. You do not read the kind of lunacy or fiction that you hear coming out of the Maricopa County Sheriff's Office with their Sheriff Joe Arpaio, or up in Pinal County with Paul Babu. And certainly the folks have chosen those folks to represent them. That's fine. But I think we do a good job by choosing Clarence Dubnyk to be our sheriff and to protect us here in Pima County.
Yeah, I have the greatest respect for Sheriff Dubnyk and his team over there and every one of the men and women of the Pima County Sheriff's Department. I send out my best kudos to them and congratulate them on the way they have handled this tragedy. Richard Elias is Pima County Supervisor. We've only got about 90 seconds to go. I had a long list of questions about issues facing Pima County. I think that can a lot of that can wait to our next visit because I wanted some of your personal thoughts. So in conclusion here, how do we go about healing in this community?
I think we go back to the things that we always have done here in Tucson. That's sharing with our families. That's listening to each other respectfully. I think it's also about participating as a good civic obligation. President Obama spoke of that last night, and I do not disagree with him at all. In fact, the young girl who died there was a budding young civic-minded citizen. We need to all step up with that spirit and guide ourselves in the direction we always have. And that means listening to each other and respecting each other and making the decisions that we think are best for our community and best for our country and best for our state.
If anything, this is a call for people to really get involved in the democratic process.
I think people really should be out there participating. Now is more important than ever. We face tremendous financial difficulties still. People are losing their homes throughout our community still. Families are being disintegrated. We have tremendous issues regarding immigration that we still face. These go right to the heart of who we are as people because they talk about family and how we're going to continue to live as families in this community. That is why I need everybody to get out there and participate and vote and let their voice be heard in a respectful way towards everyone.
Richard Elias, very well said. Thank you very much for being a guest on the Buckmaster Show. Thanks a lot.
Mil gracias, Bill.
Thank you.
Sarnoff Artist Materials is Tucson's award-winning destination for everything art-related, including fine and graphic artist supplies, framing, stationery, and the world's best writing instruments. Visit owner-operator artist Henry Sarnoff at 2504 North Campbell, three blocks north of Grant, and always at the easy-to-navigate website sarnoffart.com. Because it takes an artist to know an artist's needs.
Vero Amore presents Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan pizza using fresh homemade mozzarella and the finest quality toppings. Taste pizza as it was meant to be at Vero Amore, casual yet upscale dining with an extensive boutique wine list. Vero Amore in Tucson at North Swan and Camp Lowell, Dove Mountain in Marana, and on the web at veroamorepizza.com. Coming soon, Noble Hops, Tucson's first gastro pub.
Hi, I'm Mark Sublett, owner of Medicine Man Gallery, and I'd like to invite you to come visit me. Medicine Man Gallery is located at 7000 East Tancredi, at the southwest corner of Tancredi and Sabino Canyon, and online at medicinemangallery.com. With 12,000 square feet of exhibit space, we have a wide array of American paintings, antique Indian art, and contemporary modern art by some of the masters of the West, including Ed Nell, John Moyers, and Maynard Dixon. If you have old Indian art or American paintings you'd like to sell or consign, call me for a free evaluation, as we're always looking to add to our collection. If you can't visit us on Tancredi, then visit us online. We have over 6,000 objects to view at medicinemangallery.com. So come visit me, Mark Sublett, at Medicine Man Gallery, on the corner of Tancredi and Sabino Canyon, where there's always something new to see.
Minutes past the hour on the Buckmaster Show on KJLL AM 1330 and always on the buckmastershow.com. Many, many people finding us on that buckmastershow.com. It's very convenient for them. They can go to the website 24/7. They can log on and they can hear the program anywhere in the world. And that's kind of exciting. Joining us now in studio, Steve Lin, a Tucson Electric Power executive who chaired Arizona's first independent redistricting commission. Mr. Lin, always good to see you, Steve.
Nice to see you, Bill.
And that had been my topic, actually, talking about redistricting, but I think I will put that aside for a few minutes to talk about some of your personal feelings. You have known Gabrielle Giffords for a long time, even before she got into public office, correct?
A long time. Yeah. I've known Gabby since she was involved in her parents' tire business. And when she came back from Cornell, having gotten her MBA, she went into the tire business, and I first met her then. Then when she ran for the state legislative office, continued a friendship and a relationship all the way to her congressional run. So in that way, it was a very personal event. And I think what's interesting about Tucson is that we're still, even at a million people in the metropolitan area, we're still a very small town, and the connections are still very real and very intricate here. I was mentioning that I knew several of the people involved in the incident, not only Gabby, but certainly Ron Barber. I've known for 40 years in many capacities in his work in the community. Gabe Zimmerman tragically lost his life in the event, and his mother, Emily Nottingham, is a good friend of mine and someone I worked with at the City of Tucson for many years. And Pam Simon, I've known for many years as well, and she was injured as well. So it was a wonderful event last evening, because I think it really turned the page. It turned the page from what certainly was a tragic set of events last Saturday to what are we going to do about that? Not in a retributional way, but really in a revival way. How are we going to be different toward one another, and how are we going to honor those who were so tragically killed or injured?
How do we move on? You have been a community leader for a long time in this community, and when you first heard the news, I'm sure you were sickened like all of us and about the town we love, the community, the city we live in, and the place that is a very, very open and friendly place.
Yeah, Saturday was a very odd day for a lot of reasons. I was driving around doing some errands Saturday morning, and a colleague of mine who works in the governmental affairs office gave me a call and said, "Did you hear that there were shots fired at Gabby's Congress on the Corner event?" And I hadn't heard that. The news hadn't even picked it up yet. And I went home, turned on the news, and obviously, from the moment that it hit the national news, it was sort of a blow-by-blow, minute-by-minute account of what was going on and what was occurring at that time. But when somebody puts it in perspective, when somebody calls it an assassination attempt of a federal official, it sounds surreal, because we don't think in those terms in this community. We embrace people that we elect. We think they are wonderful people. That's why we elect them. We engage them in the very activity that Gabby was engaged in that morning, which was talking with her constituents. We expect that of our elected officials. And we never suspect that this kind of random violence is going to break out. Unfortunately, there are people in the community who are unstable for a variety of reasons and have some distorted views of what that may mean in terms of acting out. There's just no good way to prevent this kind of thing.
And that can happen, that these individuals, these unstable individuals, go to any community in America.
Absolutely. I was looking at the news this morning. Representative Peter King from New York is introducing legislation, and I worry a little bit about knee-jerk legislation anyway. I mean, I think there ought to be sort of a 10-day moratorium on reactions so that we think through some of the things we're trying to do. He's introducing a legislation that's going to make it illegal somehow for people to carry a weapon within 100 feet of 1,000 feet of an elected official. Now, The question is, how do you enforce that?
I mean, very difficult.
Does the elected official walk around with a magnetometer 1,000 feet away and you can't get through? It is about personal responsibility, and certainly those heroes who took it upon themselves to help subdue the attacker and make sure that he couldn't do any more damage than he had already done, clearly and truly are heroes in our community. And I suspect that any one of us given the same opportunity would have reacted the same way.
We're speaking with Steve Lynn, Tucson Electric Power Executive, and he's been a longtime community leader here in Tucson, getting some of his thoughts on the whole tragedy of the week. Well, how do we move on from here? What are some of your thoughts? How does the business community come together to move forward?
Well, first and foremost, we need to take care of those who are injured. Hopefully, all of them have adequate insurance coverage and other things that will take care of the enormous costs associated with recuperation and rehabilitation. Beyond that, we simply need to continue to keep this event fresh in our minds in one sense, that we always understand that our elected officials and others are literally a heartbeat away from this kind of tragedy if we aren't all vigilant about proper care for those who are mentally disturbed. Proper services available and accessible for those who may need some sort of assistance in that way, and I'm not a big anti or pro gun person either way, but I don't think the answer is either arming ourselves as a community or disarming ourselves as a community, because guns don't do those kinds of things, people do, and it's a matter of whether or not we can take the tragedy and turn it into something positive for the future. And I think this community certainly is capable of doing that.
This community has had difficult times before, and I am confident, and I think you are as well, Mr. Lynn, that we will get through this. And we are, it's almost like after that memorial last night, you could feel a shift. We were starting the process of moving forward.
Yeah, I think that was a turning point, Bill, and I hope that we stop talking about the tragedy in Tucson and start concentrating on what we can do together as a community to come back from that and be even better than we were before.
Mr. Lynn, we will have you back to talk about redistricting, because that's an issue that's not going away, right?
It will not, and I will be happy to come back talk to you anytime.
Is there a deadline on when that has to be all nailed down?
Well, the courts have to act before the end of the month so that the leadership can make their selections, and the commission, the new commission, has to draw lines by early next year.
Oh boy, the clock is running, right? Lots of pressure there.
Absolutely.
Steve Lynn, thank you so much for sharing some of your thoughts on this very personal issue.
Thank you, Bill.
Thanks a lot. It's coming up on 9:30 on the Buckmaster Show. We have CNN News coming up. Then Gary Hayes will be joining us, head of the Regional Transportation Authority and the Pima Association of Governments. That's coming up next on the Buckmaster Show on this Thursday.
To this.
You're tuned into Tucson's best choice for local talk.
I love it, huh? Little back and forth, witty repartee.
KJLL, South Tucson.
CNN Radio, I'm Bill Caiaccio. Finding a job is still a problem for a lot of people. The government says first-time jobless claims jumped by 35,000 for the week. Economist Todd Horowitz explains why the number was up.
All the holiday help has been let go. Those are back on the unemployment line. You know, jobs are still a big issue in this country, so there's still some problems.
One bright spot is that the number of people who continue to collect unemployment is down. The funeral for 9-year-old Christina Green is later today in Tucson. She was the youngest of the six people who died in last Saturday's shooting. Vice President Joe Biden is talking about the future of U.S.-Iraqi relations with Iraq's prime minister today. Biden is in Baghdad on a surprise visit. Thousands of Americans will get their tax refunds on a prepaid card instead of a paper check. The government is trying to give people without bank accounts an easier way to get their money. The most trusted name in news. This is CNN Radio.
Hey, Kelly. So, who'd you hire to do your emails?
What? You know it's just me here.
Come on, I got your newsletter. Pretty fancy, photos, coupons. Come on, who is it?
Oh, no one, silly. I use Constant Contact.
Really?
With ConstantContact.com, it's so easy. They make me look like $1 million, and the emails really work.
Oh, yeah?
It got you in here today, didn't it?
Touché.
ConstantContact.com. Plans as low as $15 a month with a free 60-day trial.
Intuit Small Business presents Payroll in 30 Seconds. Just type employee hours into Intuit Online Payroll. Wages and taxes are calculated automatically. A few more clicks to print paychecks or make a direct deposit, and we're done. In our remaining time, here's a flock of pigeons playing ragtime piano with their beaks. Try Intuit Online Payroll free for 30 days at Intuit.com. We do the legwork so you can do what you love. Intuit. Small business rejoice.
The Arizona Inn is the only Tucson hotel named by Travel and Leisure magazine as one of the top 500 hotels in the world for 2011. Located in Midtown, close to the University of Arizona, the Arizona Inn is located at 2200 East Elm Street and on the web at arizonainn.com. The Arizona Inn maintains AAA Four Diamond status for both the hotel and dining room, with Chef Allison serving up breakfast, lunch, and dinner daily, with a featured menu and seasonal favorites. And because the Arizona Inn is listed on the National Register of Historic Places, founded by Arizona's first Congresswoman, Isabella Greenway, the Arizona Inn provides an historic backdrop for your next special event. Arizona Inn is the perfect setting for weddings, anniversary celebrations, or your next business meeting, and you can make your reservations online at arizonainn.com. The Arizona Inn, luxury and elegance in the heart of Tucson.
Sarnoff Artist Materials is your one-stop store for fine and graphic artist supplies, framing, stationery, and Mont Blanc and other top-of-the-line writing instruments. Order online at sarnoffart.com or visit owner-operator Henry Sarnoff and his store staffed by artists, for artists, and those who seek the finest quality in everything art-related. Sarnoff Artist Materials, 2504 North Campbell, 3 blocks north of Grant, and always at sarnoffart.com.
Taste pizza as it was meant to be at Vero More, Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan pizza, topped with the finest, freshest quality ingredients. Enjoy casual yet upscale dining while sampling our extensive boutique wine list. Vero More in Tucson at North Swan and Camp Lowell, Dove Mountain in Marana, and on the web at VeroAmorePizza.com. And coming soon, Noble Hops, Tucson's first gastro pub.
It's coming up on 35 minutes before the hour on the Buckmaster Show on KJLL and on BuckmasterShow.com. Gary Hayes joins us now on the Buckmaster Show. Mr. Hayes is Executive Director of the Regional Transportation Authority. He also is the Executive Director of the Pima Association of Governments. Mr. Hayes, always good to see you.
Good morning, Bill. Good to see you.
And I know on behalf of all of the governments of Pima County and the RTA, you, along with the entire community, has been shocked about the events of the last few days.
Absolutely. No question about it. I think we're all stunned. I was in New York when 9/11 hit. I think we'll all remember where we were on Saturday, just like we all remember where we were on 9/11.
Let's talk a little bit about, you've been talking with community leaders about the impact of the Gabrielle Giffords assassination attempt. What are the government leaders telling you when you talk to them at the Pima Association of Governments?
Well, as you know, the PAG group consists of the mayors of all of our jurisdictions, and most of those folks participated in the event of last night and very concerned about, you know, what this means to our community. Can we come together? And if you think about it, PEG and the RGA really are about jurisdictions coming together in common bond, common interest to improving the region. On the way out here this morning, I heard an interview with the lady who pulled the ammunition from the assailant, and she made an interesting comment. She said, I moved here for the weather. I stayed here for the people. And I think that's going to resonate. I think that was a great, great message.
Let's move on. The RTA is facing, at least according to a story that was widely circulated in the Arizona Daily Star, and I think they labeled it an acute cash shortage due to some underestimated project costs and revenue shortfall. What's the story? What's the bottom line on this?
Well, we really disagree with that story. We've made it clear to the reporter, and we met with them a number of times. Actually, the chair of our Citizens Committee did an op-ed piece in the Star a few days later. As I reported to you in the past, Bill, our proceeds are down not nearly as much as the state and other local jurisdictions. I think our proceeds are down about 13%, but our construction bids are coming in 26 to 29% below. So on net, it's not always an apples-to-apples comparison, but on net, we're ahead of the curve. Well, the challenge to us is how you manage your finances, just like your family finances, how you phase the work that you do, at the same time fulfilling your commitment to the voters. We also have the ability and the authority to bond as necessary, and that was always in the original plan that was presented to the voters. So we can do that. We just simply need to manage our finances just like any jurisdiction.
Now, that story indicated that this cash shortage would force $85 million in construction projects to be delayed. Is that going to happen over the next 5 years?
No. It's important to know that the RTA plan is based on 4 or 5 year cycles. Many of the major projects that consume most of the money, the Grant Road and so forth, happen over 3-5 year cycles. The premise of the article was that it all had to happen right away. And as you phase the work that you do, as you manage your finances, and again, fulfill your commitment to the voters, you're in good shape.
On May 16th, Mr. Hayes, as you well know, 2006, Pima County voters approved a half-cent sales tax and a 20-year transportation program for this area. Where are we in respect to that timetable?
We have collected, first of all, we're about 4.5 years into the first 5 year cycle. We've collected nearly $300 million in sales tax proceeds. We've spent actually somewhere around $240, $250. We have a balance right now of about $56 million in the fund. We have already approved over 500 projects. We've constructed nearly 200 projects. We have 20 some odd in construction right now, simply on the roadway side. On the transit side, we've made significant investments. You've seen the new branding of the SunTrans system, the new increase in services, both during the day, during the night, and on the weekend. So we've made that investment. We'll continue to make that investment. So we're sort of putting our money where our mouth is. We've collected it, but we've spent it. We're acutely aware that the RTA plan is a major economic initiative in town, and we're using that money wisely.
We're speaking with Gary Hayes. Mr. Hayes heads up the Regional Transportation Authority. And, of course, one component of the RTA is light rail. And I think, Mr. Hayes, many people do not they don't connect the dots here. They think of RTA as road projects, the light rail component.
Right. The RTA plan is really multimodal. Its roadways based on 35 major corridors, the arterials, the Grant Roads, and so forth. But there's approximately 28% of the funds, $534 million, are dedicated to transit. Of that, $88 million are dedicated to the modern streetcar, which is our region's version of light rail. But we have also money going into wildlife crossings, sidewalk improvements, intersection improvements, safety improvements, bus pullouts. It truly is a multimodal plan.
What's the difference between a modern streetcar and light rail?
Most of it is technical. A light rail, like you see in Phoenix, is much more capital intensive, goes deeper into the roadway and putting the rails in, has a more cars that ride together at the same time. So it's a slightly different, higher cost process that you use for light rail than what you use for a modern streetcar.
What's the price tag on this modern streetcar?
Total price tag in terms of our involvement is $88 million. The total capital investment right now is $196 million, although we expect that to come down once all the bids come in for the rail and other things. The streetcars themselves are under construction in Portland right now, and we've been visiting the manufacturing of operation that goes on there. We expect this to be up and running by 2013, if not sooner.
How did you decide on a modern streetcar rather than putting actual rails in there? What are the advantages? Obviously, there's a cost advantage.
The cost is a key advantage. When the citizens group that put the plan together evaluated all the variety of options, we work with the transit community in the Tucson area. They felt very strongly that the modern streetcar was the way to go, recognizing who we are, that it's expandable, that you need a fixed route that you can use. Interesting, we did a symposium in December of 2009 where we brought in the leaders from Denver, San Antonio, San Diego, Salt Lake City, and they all said you need to invest in light rail of some kind. But streetcars is starting to pick up interest, not only in New Orleans, but other parts of the country. San Diego already has a streetcar. Fort Worth has been toying with the idea. So it's a slightly different way of viewing light rail.
Does economic development follow these projects, modern streetcar?
The history is that it has. A modern streetcar and light rail are the impetus to create economic development. So you get into a chicken and the egg. You hear criticisms that where is it going to go? Who's going to ride it? The numbers are there, and we're already starting seeing interest along the proposed four-mile line. Of increased economic development opportunities.
Let's broaden this just a little bit, because you do wear the two hats with the Pima Association of Governments. Beside transportation, what are your main concerns for 2011?
Well, obviously, growth is somewhat stalled, and we look at that as an opportunity to do other kinds of things. One of the concerns we do have is that we expect the Federal Environmental Protection Agency to come out with new regulations on ozone. And what's that going to do and how that's going to impact our region? I'll give you an example. On Tuesday, I was in Phoenix. Gasoline in Phoenix is 40 cents more a gallon. 40 cents more a gallon.
And why is that?
It's oxygenated. The Phoenix area and Maricopa are not in compliance with federal air quality standards. And because of that, they have to tremendously oxygenate their fuels and do other kinds of things. That's why it's so expensive. If we're in violation of ozone standards, and we're tracking that very closely, we're going to see a spike in our gas prices. We're going to see a spike in our gas prices anyway if you follow national trends, but it's going to be more hurtful.
And why are we perhaps in violation of these ozone regulations?
Most of it is vehicle driven, and obviously we're an area that is car dependent, auto dependent, and you're going to see those kinds of issues. I think the issue is greater, though, that the standard is getting tighter and is increasing, because actually we're seeing less miles driven. We're seeing alternative fuel vehicles. Our region is really committed to clean fuels and what we do. You look at our SunTrans system, you look at our other elements, we're really committed to alternative fuels.
How is SunTrans doing right now?
I think SunTrans is struggling in terms of what the city's budget's going to look like. As you know, the SunTrans is funded primarily by the city's general fund. And that's a challenge. That is not the experience in those other cities that I mentioned, the Denver, Salt Lake cities, and so forth. They all are operated on a regional basis as opposed to a city basis. I think their ridership is down a little bit. I think that's driven by the economy. I think they're very concerned about the spike in gas prices and how that's going to affect their ability to provide service. One of the interesting challenges we have, the RTA investment is for expanded transit services, not for core transit services. And if the city, because of their general fund problems or budgetary problems, has a problem with core services, we're going to have a challenge in continuing the RTA investment for expanded services.
But the RTA is still interested in SunTran, perhaps taking over that function from the
city?
Well,
we look at the experiences, like I said, in these other regions, and I think it just makes some sense. The direction I have from the RTA board is step back. We're not actively pursuing this. We're following the budget discussions in the city to see how they play out.
Water, of course, is another Pima Association of Government looks at that, besides the transportation, beside the environment. Will that be a priority as well?
It's always a priority for the region. Water resources, wastewater management, always a priority for the region. We're dealing with that in a number of ways, dealing with groundwater aquifer issues that have to be dealt with in Sienica Creek, other parts of the region that are critical to our water supply.
In the remaining minute, what should be the marquee projects we should look for on the RTA side as far as road work? In 2011?
In 2011, it begins the second 5 years of the plan. That's when there's major construction along Grant, the downtown Lynx area, which is the extension of Barraza Aviation, 22nd Street, Houghton Road will be a major project during the second phase. So the challenge we have is a little bit less the RTA money and more is the local match there. Is the impact fee there? Is the bond money there? And we're scheduling that over the five-year period.
But again, in conclusion, you do not see a big delay happening.
No, we do not. We're committed to everything we promised to the voters. I'll give you the best example. First 5 years ends in July 2011. We committed to begin construction on 11 roadway projects. They'll all be under construction or completed.
Okay, Gary Hayes, thank you so much for being a guest on the Buckmaster Show.
Thanks for
having me.
We'll
see you again. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
The Arizona Inn is the only Tucson hotel named by Travel and Leisure magazine as one of the top 500 hotels in the world for 2011. Located in Midtown, close to the University of Arizona, the Arizona Inn is located at 2200 East Elm Street and on the web at arizonainn.com. The Arizona Inn maintains AAA four diamond status for both the hotel and dining room, with Chef Allison serving up breakfast, lunch, and dinner daily, with a featured menu and seasonal favorites. And because the Arizona Inn is listed on the National Register of Historic Places, founded by Arizona's first Congresswoman, Isabella Greenway, the Arizona Inn provides an historic backdrop for your next special event. Arizona Inn is the perfect setting for weddings, anniversary celebrations, or your next business meeting, and you can make your reservations online at arizonainn.com. The Arizona Inn, luxury and elegance in the heart of Tucson.
Hi, I'm Mark Sublett, owner of Medicine Man Gallery, and I'd like to invite you to come visit me. Medicine Man Gallery is located at 7000 East Tinka Verde, at the southwest corner of Tinka Verde and Sabino Canyon, and online at medicinemangallery.com. With 12,000 square feet of exhibit space, we have a wide array of American paintings, antique Indian art, and contemporary modern art by some of the masters of the West, including Ed Mell, John Moyers, and Maynard Dixon. If you have old Indian art or American paintings you'd like to sell or consign, call me for a free evaluation, as we're always looking to add to our collection. If you can't visit us on Tinka Verde, then visit us online. We have over 6,000 objects to view at medicinemangallery.com. So come visit me, Mark Sublett, at Medicine Man Gallery on the corner of Tinka Verde and Sabino Canyon, where there's always something new to see.
It's 48 minutes before the hour on the Buckmaster Show. The assassination attempt of Gabrielle Giffords is one of the very few assassination attempts on a member of the House of Representatives, and unfortunately, it happened in our community. Joining us now on the Buckmaster Show is our contributor on local history. You'll be hearing from this gentleman probably at least once a month. His name is Ken Scoville. He's a native Arizonan who has been a teacher in Tucson for many years. He's written extensively on Tucson's history. Mr. Scoville, thanks for being with us.
Good morning, Bill.
It's a pleasure to have you, and give us some kind of historical background on all this. A horrible thing, of course, did happen in our town, and history cannot be changed, but maybe we can get some perspective on what this means from an historical point of view.
Well, I think for me, it really means that we acted much more like a small town would. And I think I watched the presentation, the talks last night. Dr. Shelton mentioned that we were a city of a million people, but essentially we acted like a small town. And I think especially the best traditions of a small town, that I'm still amazed myself how many heroes, that's overdone a little bit, but how many people really helped each other that you would find in a small town. And I think from my own standpoint, we're all so close to this. There's this concept of 6 degrees of separation that
right.
If you go out like this. Well, for me, it's just like next door, one of my neighbors in the townhouse that, development that I live in, one of the retired people, she was one of the people killed.
Oh, my goodness.
I still work for Amphitheater School District, and the student went to Mesa Verde Elementary. And I know another person. So for all of us just to think for a moment, it's not very far till you know somebody that was involved with that.
Yeah, I mean, that degree of separation is so little in this case, and it seems like everybody does know someone who was had someone involved in this tragedy. From a historic point of view, last night was really history in the making with this presidential visit as I was watching it on TV. I mean, it's especially rare for a president and a first lady to make a visit to Tucson, Arizona. And I can only think, Ken, of a couple of recent presidential visits. I think President George W. Bush was visiting for a quick fundraising event a few years ago.
Right, that was actually
widely publicized.
First Avenue and Ina at the former Bell residence.
Yes, right? And that I think was a Tim B. fundraiser,
right,
as I recall.
Right.
And President Bill Clinton spending the day here on Rodeo Day back in the 1990s.
Was actually on February 19th, 1999, and he was here to talk about Social Security and Medicare. So there's a connection still with us even today, but he was there.
And the reason I remember that rodeo connection is Mayor Miller, it was Rodeo Day,
the question about the dress,
exactly.
But if you understood that
and
it was
Mayor,
rodeo, then
yeah,
you would
Mayor
understand.
Mayor Miller had greeted the president. But this was very rare because he also brought President Obama, bringing not only the First Lady, but many of the dignitaries from Washington. That's very rare in Tucson.
Never happened before. I actually looked a little bit, if the audience be curious to know. Gerald Ford, former president Gerald Ford, was here in 1974, and he was here trying to improve relations with Mexico. Mm-hmm. And the president of Mexico was also here, Luis Echeverria.
Echeverria,
here.
Yes.
Echeverria was here. There was a little bit of a protest because it was right after the pardon of former President Nixon.
And we go back to some real early visits, huh?
Oh,
you want to give us a few of them
really quickly. Great one. Dwight Eisenhower was here in 1957 in January, and they were talking about drought issues in the West. And perfect 1950s scene. We had a prime rib dinner for him, and we had a potato salad presented in the form of an American flag.
Oh, my goodness.
Perfect 1950s.
And give him hell, Harry. Did he come out here?
He was actually here, but when you count people – as far as whether they really came here in Tucson, Mr. Truman came through at night, and he never came out to visit people. He just was asleep in his Pullman car.
Who was the first president, do you know, that visited Tucson, Arizona?
Rutherford B. Hayes.
Huh.
And he was in here just in October of 1880 to celebrate the connection of the country with the railroad. Mm. So he was on a Grand Circle tour here in Tucson. And one thing that I thought was very interesting, he was really surprised how well-dressed the crowd was to meet him at the train station. In fact, he thought, for a far-flung western town, how felt like he was in the East. Yeah. There were so many well-dressed people.
We're speaking with Ken Scoville, who is the Buckmaster Show historian, giving us a little context about some of these the events that have gone on this week. What about Black Mark on Tucson, Arizona, from something like this? As I mentioned in my opening remarks, we can't erase history. It's going to be in the history books what happened here Saturday.
Well, I think from a local history standpoint, last night was so critical for the community that we really saw all the people, our multiculturalism, all the resources of the university, our symphony, all the great people here in Tucson, that I think to anybody here, the tragedy was almost eclipsed in a way by how many great people and the support of the community.
I want to mention that the Old Fort Lowell Neighborhood Association will be presenting two history lectures at the Little San Pedro Chapel. That's located at 5230 East Fort Lowell Road, and Ken Scoville will be giving two presentations, one Sunday, January 23rd at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, then the following Sunday, January 30th at 3 p.m. You're speaking on the first one about the Chiricahua Apache.
Well, no, that's actually another presenter. That's Rebecca Orozco.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Right.
Well, I gave her a plug, too, and that's fine.
That's fine.
So she'll be speaking on the Chiricahua Apache in Myth and History, and your presentation on Sunday, January 30th at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. What are you going to be speaking about?
How important Fort Lowell is that in a way, it's a microcosm of the history of Arizona. So many of the different cultural layers and the impact of water on civilization in Arizona are all there at Fort Lowell. So I'm really talking about that. And I think it's especially important as we're coming into our centennial year.
And we will be on your next visit with us. Perhaps we can also talk a little bit more in detail about Fort Lowell and the annual Fort Lowell Day celebration. I think that is Saturday, February the 12th from noon to 4 p.m. That's always a fun event.
Oh, it's a fun event. And this is their 30th anniversary.
Let's go back now to reflect again, Ken, about what has happened this week. When you first heard about this, were you thinking as a historian or were you thinking as just a Tucsonan?
Oh, I was thinking of it as a Tucsonan, first of all. Yeah. But I always like to make the connections about how we were sort of today the same way that we were in the past. And I was thinking about this in Territorial Times in Tucson. We have sort of a mythical view that Hollywood has provided for us as far as...
Of kind of a violent past.
Right. We have had a violent past. But it really wasn't the Gary Cooper High Noon. It was more ambush or fights in saloons. And I think there was a culture in Tucson, even during the Territorial Times, that if you went looking for trouble and you found it in a saloon and you got drunk or an argument and you got injured or killed, that was your own business. But even back in the 1870s, if innocent law-abiding people were hurt or killed, that was a problem for the community.
You know, that movie Tombstone about the shootout that happened, not at the OK Corral, but there was a shootout at the Tucson train station, right? I mean, I think that's accurate.
Yes,
that really
did happen, didn't it? Right. One of the Earp brothers was going to California to try and sort of mend from wounds, and Wyatt came up, and then there was an ambush, and I think it was Mr. Clanton that actually got shot. I'm not certain about that. I'm not a real Wild West historian, but I think the closest contact for me would be that the murder of Vicente and Librada Hernandez in 1873. Mm-hmm. They just moved here to Tucson in the last 6 months, and they opened up sort of a pawnbroker barter business, and friends came over to visit, and they'd both been murdered. And there was just outrage in the community. There's several different confession stories, but they found the perpetrators, and the whole town turned out for the funeral, and is characteristic of Territorial Times, they lynched all those people the same day after the funeral.
But from a historic perspective, when you look at the front page news that this unfortunate event made all over the world, I mean, yeah. London, right. I had some friends in London, they said, emailed me Sunday, this Tucson was on the front page of the London papers. You can't think in our history, can you, of any time the Tucson was this prominent?
No, there isn't anything from my record at this level. Obviously, we're so tied in by the web and technology and things that these kinds of events, because of our new media, get out there.
How is this going to change the talks that you give about Tucson history?
Well, I think it has to be to highlight again the small town nature and the great traditions and what's part of Tucson that. We know everybody, we're connected to people, and when something like this happens, we all feel it.
Okay, Ken Scoville, I want to give another plug for you because you do really a wonderful talk. People say that you really put history in a great perspective. And Sunday, January 3rd, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, Fort Lowell, a look at the history of Arizona with Ken Scoville. Tell us a little bit where the San Pedro Chapel is, if people aren't really familiar with it.
It's in the El Presidio Historic District, which is just going to be east of Swan and west of Craycroft on Fort Lowell Road. You'll notice that the road narrows, and to your right, you'll see a small little chapel on a hill. Thankfully, it was saved among many historic sites in the neighborhood.
It's a neat little chapel, and it has been restored beautifully. Ken Scoville, thanks a lot for being with us.
Thank you very much, Bill.
Ken Scoville, who is the Buckmaster Show historian. The Buckmaster Show is brought to you in part by Flowers, Rieger & Associates, Certified Public Accountants. They're located at 2919 East Broadway, and they're on the web at flowersrieger.com. Flowers Rieger is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Very good friends over there. Stop by and say hello to Michael C. Flowers. That's going to do it for this Thursday of the Buckmaster Show. I want to talk about tomorrow's program, the Friday Roundtable on radio. Yes, there is no more Friday Roundtable on TV, but there is a Friday Roundtable on radio, and it's right here on the Buckmaster Show tomorrow morning live at 9 o'clock, and our newsmaker guest, our Friday Focus guest, will be the city manager of Tucson, Arizona, Mike Letcher, and of course, we'll be expanding our Friday Roundtable roundtable with our roundtable reporters to reflect on the horrible events of the past few days.